And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Well, we're going to start a two-part series this week, and we'll conclude it next week, so you don't want to miss next week. And, of course, then we'll offer, as we always do, this program and next week's on a compact disc, a CD, and also by audio tape. And, you know, some years ago, I did a audio tape special report, and we distributed, I'm sure, thousands of copies of that at the time. It was entitled, "The Pigs Are in the Parlor." The pigs are in the parlor. You know, back in the old days, that's what they call the sort of the living room or the waiting room. When people came to visit, they sat in the parlor. Well, it seems that the pigs push aside other people and go right in and not only sit in the parlor, but they amble on over to the kitchen, eat whatever they want, and then they trail all of their dirt and muck over into the bedroom and kick us out of bed. So maybe we need to identify them just after they've come in the door and they're still in the parlor before they kick us out of the bed, and, well, then they have the run of the house. But we did that tape series called "The Pigs Are in the Parlor," in which I exposed, unmasked, the plot of the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission to gobble up literally the whole world, but especially America, because we're now what they call the only remaining superpower. I want to talk some more about the pigs and the parlor, but I want to propose to you that they're still here. They're still in the parlor. We've got to identify them. We've got to expose them further. Now, I don't know if we're going to be able to stop the pigs. They're pretty fat now. They've been at the trough a long time. And they're gobbling up everything. They'll eat anything. Pretty greedy. They're still here. What are we going to do about it? You know, the Apostle Paul said, in the last days, men would be deceived, and then they would go about deceiving others. He also said that things will wax, that is, become or increase worse and worse until the end comes. Things are not going to get better. They're going to get worse. And as far as faith goes, Jesus said, "Will the Son of Man, when he returns, even find faith on planet Earth?" There's not going to be much. No wonder he said, "Enter therein at the narrow gate." Because the broad way is the way to destruction. You know, God created the nations. He did. A lot of people don't understand. At the Tower of Babel, God said, basically, "Let there be nations." He confounded the builder of the New World Order, Nimrod, and Semiramis, his lovely goddess wife. In Egypt, of course, they were commemorated as Isis and Osiris, and they had a son named Horus. But there at the Tower of Babel, God confounded them. That's why the very name Babylon means Babel or confusion, chaos. God made the world chaotic because men sought to bring it together, to unite it under Lucifer, under the solar deity. Men have always sought to bring harmony and peace without Jesus to this earth, and they always fail. Dr. Peter Ruckman out in Florida. I don't agree with him on some of the things he does, but one thing that he said in the book I read by him that I certainly agreed with, he said that all empire builders are bloody killers. All empire builders are bloody killers. Well, look back in history, whether it was Attila the Hun or Genghis Khan, the Mongol invader, or the Roman legions, Julius Caesar, Napoleon, Stalin. They're all bloody killers, and they've sought to bring about a great empire of man. And so it is, if you read the textbooks of Freemasonry, you find that their goal is a universal empire. They're pigs. And they're deadly. You know, when I was a kid, we would go visit my cousins in Arkansas and Oklahoma, and they sometimes would have pigs on their farm. And I was a small town boy. I really wasn't a farm boy, and I was always sort of intrigued about these strange, brutish creatures called pigs and hogs. And I would notice my cousin, my uncles would go out there and feed them. And I wanted to feed him one time. I said, I was just a little kid. I said, hey, let me do that. That sounds like a lot of fun. He says, well, no, because you got to know what you're doing. Because they can turn and rend you. And let me tell you something. They can actually kill you. They've actually killed people. I said, what? I didn't know that. They look slow, pondering. But they have a goal. Their goal is to get at that food. Don't get in their way. My cousin told me, oh, okay, well, I'll stay away from those pigs, those hogs. They're still in the parlor, friends. We're going to expose them today a little further. We're going to add a new group, too, called the Council of the Americas. These people, not only empire builders, but they're organization architects. And they're building more and more secret societies and organizations all the time. As we expose one, they just start another one. And we're going to tell you what these organizations are doing and what it means to you and to me and our loved ones. I am convinced all of these are cults. They're just cults. C-U-L-T-S. They're Illuminati cults. The CFR, the Trilateral Commission, let's just call it the TLC. And that doesn't mean tender loving care either, dear friend. The Council on Foreign Relations, CFR, the Council of the Americas, CA. We're going to be looking at some very eye-opening documentation that the plot and agenda of these groups is basically New World conspiratorial. They're traitors to America. Those that were born in this country that claim to be citizens, although in their private conversations and sometime they even write books and say flat out, we're not really an American, we're an internationalist, we're globalist. And isn't that really what Michael Dell, Bill Gates, and all of the other corporation chieftains are? Globalist? They don't really love America. They just love your money. And they're extending their neo-fascist empire around the world. And that's always been true of the left wing, and now it's true of the right wing. But the left wing always has fought for communism, socialism, a borderless world. We're going to get into that in just a minute. We're going to be looking at some of the leaders, especially beginning with World War I and leading all the way up to 2007, of the pigs in the parlor. We'll look at all these people, and you'll note that one thing is common to all of them. They are all Zionist, because they're following the program, the blueprint, the protocols of a document entitled the Protocols of Zion, We're going to offer that book to you today, too. You're going to see that everything I'm telling you was called for in this book that's been around for over a century. And they're following it like a blueprint. Just, you know, get a builder and an architect and get blueprints for a house, and they just go item by item. Every once in a while, they'll deviate. They'll find that their blueprint doesn't work in this aspect or that aspect. They may want to add a window here or carve out maybe a little thing there, a little niche. But basically, it's the same blueprint and program you're going to find in the Protocols of Zion. My good friend over in Britain, we published his book, The Synagogue of Satan. He talks about this same program. His name, Andrew Carrington Hitchcock, will tell you how to get his book, The Synagogue of Satan. And there it is. These are the men. Men like Colonel E. Mandel House. Advisor, quote unquote, actually dictator to President Woodrow Wilson. Then there's Bernard Baruch. He was called the advisor and counselor to the presidents because he told Franklin Roosevelt what to do, and also Truman. It sort of rankled and made Truman a little bit mad under the collar, but he had to do what his Zionist overlords told him, or they got rid of him. In fact, they did get rid of him. They told him, only one election for you, but buddy, get out. Go home to your little hovel there in Independence, Missouri. We're not going to make you rich like we've done all our other servants. You're going to have to stay in that little house and take your little walk every day, and you're not going to have enough money to do anything because you betrayed us, Mr. Truman, there at the end. You've got to continue kissing their feet all the way to the day of your death. Even on your deathbed, you better say, I love Zionism, and the Jews are lords on earth. They're never happy if one moment you're not loyal to the Zionist cause. E. Mandel House, Bernard Baruch, David Rockefeller, J.P. Morgan, they've all labored mightily to end America's freedom, set up a borderless world, enthrone what is called a money clad. In other words, their clothing is money. They clothe themselves with money. A money clad world dictatorship. You know, I use the words money clad advisedly because it says in the Bible that there will come a time when Jesus invites his children to a great feast or banquet up in heaven. But some try to sneak in uninvited. And you know how he recognizes them? Well, they don't have their garments on. They're naked. They don't have their clothing. You see, Jesus has to clothe you with his word, with his blood. If you have any other kind of clothing on, you're naked. Remember what he says in the book of Revelation of the church of Laodicea? You think you've got fancy clothes on and you're rich, but you're poor, he says. You're poverty stricken. You're in rags and you don't even know it, he tells the rich church at Laodicea. This is the Laodicean age we're in, friends. This is the Laodicean church, and these are the Laodicean workers of iniquity, and the only clothing they have on is money, because they love it, because they're evil, and because the love of money, Paul told his good friend Timothy, is the root of all evil. But there's more than money involved. There's a spirituality. Yes, I'm going to tell you a little secret, friends. I've been working on my newest book now, and I have a whole chapter on there about the religion and spirituality in my new book. It's going to be coming out in a few months. I'm not going to talk about that today. I have way too much more important right now for you. But I talked about the spirituality of the Illuminati. You may be surprised. I do not think they simply want greedy money, power, for the end of itself. No, these people are religious. A lot of folks don't know that. They are carrying a great burden for the world. They wish to redeem the world. You see, Lucifer has been sick and angry ever since he was thrown out of heaven. And then he came down to this pitiful, puny planet Earth, and then God taunted and mocked Lucifer. You say, where is that in the Bible? Well, just read it in the book of Job. It says there, at a given time, in God's great calendar and agenda, he called all of his servants up to heaven to answer to him. And one of them was Lucifer or Satan. Did you hear what I just said? God called all of his servants up to heaven to give an account of themselves. He's going to call you to heaven one day, friends. Or at least before the judgment seat. I hope it's heaven he calls you up to. And every person is going to have to give an account of himself. And let me tell you something. You will not be able to lie, obfuscate, haze, cover up. Everything will be revealed. Everything. What a place of embarrassment that could be. And revelation. And glory. Hopefully. But on this given day, there was Lucifer, and God said, okay, give an account of yourself. What have you been doing? He says, well, I've been walking to and forth on earth, seeking whom I could devour. He told the truth. Of course, you have to tell the truth for God. God already knew. He just makes you give an account. He already knows. Why does he ask you? He does what he wants. So he says, you answer to me. What have you been doing? I've been walking to and fro on the earth, seeking whom I could devour. That goes along with what Peter said in the New Testament. He's like a roaring lion walking about the earth. And he has his human agents walking too, with him, seeking who they can devour, devastate, destroy. God decided to play with him a little bit. That's God's prerogative. He might do that to you someday, friends. I don't know. I hope not. He said, well, have you considered my servant Job? Have you been able to devour him? The devil said, well, no, because you put a hedge of protection around him. I haven't been able to get to him. Now, friends, that's about all I'm going to tell you about the Bible. That's about all you need to know. Isn't that a whole sermon in itself? The devil wants to destroy you and me and every soul on this earth. He's seeking ways to do it. But there are a few people whom God has called his chosen ones. And he puts a hedge of protection. And the devil can't get to them. And God even mocks and taunts the devil, torments him, and says, hey, you haven't been able to get to him, have you? He shows the devil up for what he is. A loser. A colossal loser. But God, for whatever reason, I'm not going to question him. He's taken this loser and given him this puny planet and said, okay, do what you can with it for a while and lead all of your servants toward the fiery destiny of the pit of hell, except you can't touch my people. My few people you can't touch. The rest of them, take them. Today I want to talk to you about those servants of hell that the devil has taken. And they want to take you and me and this whole planet. And they're empire builders. And they're bloody killers. Do I sound dramatic, friends? I'm trying to say something. This is ultimately important. It's important because there are 6 billion people on this earth. And if Jesus told the truth and said that his way is a narrow way and only the few find that way, then I'm trying to tell you something. The pigs are in the parlor, and the parlor is the entire planet Earth. And they are here, and they're rending people and devouring people. We're going to talk about these people, but I want you to know that they basically, right now, as I see it, there are four pillars of these pigs in the parlor, the Illuminati. Their agenda has four great pillars, and we're going to be talking about those four pillars today and next week. Here's what they are. First, they want to establish a Zionist global empire. A Zionist global empire. Second, their task in order to achieve this global empire and fulfill their destiny of this empire of blood, their goal is to incite and oversee a disastrous clash of civilizations. How can they win the whole world except to cause chaos, to cause a clash of civilizations? And thus they pit left against right, conservative against the other side, one religion against another, one ethnic group or race against another, one nation state against another. They believe the way to success, the way of opportunity, is to succeed out of chaos. Look what they've done. World War I, World War II, the Korean War, the wars in the Middle East, the Vietnam War, the war right now. How many hundreds of thousands of Iraqis and Afghanis and, yes, Americans have been slain in this bloody war of the Illuminati that their servant Bush is fighting for them? A clash of civilizations. The third pillar of the Illuminati is their goal is to end American sovereignty. First, by forming the North American Union by 2010. And then, of course, we'll be joined with Russia and with Europe. A fourth pillar of the Illuminati is their goal is to transform the United States into a third world culture and economy. A third world culture, because Christianity cannot be the dominant force any longer. It will not be allowed. It must be merged with the other religions and cultures. The American economy, its middle class, must be crushed, must be collapsed. And then its desperate citizens will be subservient to Illuminist leadership and globalist solutions. God must fail the American people. You see, the American people have always believed, wrongly by the way, that God has blessed America because we're prosperous, because we have money. But what happens if the Illuminati cause our money to dry up? We'll even get a new currency called the Amaro, and then finally a world currency, a global, called the Phoenix. And the American economy will be brought down to the dregs, and we'll be just like everybody else. In fact, God's going to raise up other economies, China, India. He'll bring us down. And then even our own country, we're going to be Mexicanized, Canadianized. It's already in the process. Christian culture, forget it. We're not a Christian nation. And then, right now, they've been telling you, see, they've been building it up for about 20 years with this prosperity gospel, this word of faith movement, saying, only if you have riches are you really blessed by God. No poverty-stricken pastor can be blessed by God. Only the rich. And if you want to be rich, well, just turn to Jesus and God, and he'll make you rich. And, you know, even the people over in Africa and South America, they've been told this lie. America's rich because, well, they believe in the Christian way. Capitalism. Many Africans have wanted to become Christians because of that. Many in South America and other places around the world. What happens, though, when America is no better than Nicaragua? No better than Cuba or Haiti or Pakistan? When we're a third world nation, too, and our workers don't make any more than anywhere else. In fact, our workers can't even get a job because they've been replaced by all of these foreign illegal immigrants. Ah, your God failed you. The God that failed, the Christian God, failed you. Maybe the Chinese God is better. The Chinese way. What's their God? Well, Confucius? No, not quite. Well, they do believe in the Tao. Well, that's still not... Basically, they believe that they themselves are God. Money is God. Money will replace Jesus as God of the United States. And Jesus can't get it to you. You'll have to go somewhere else. You might have to go to the devil. You might have to go to Lucifer if Jesus fails you. I'm waiting for the day, very sadly, when all of these people that have been lied to by the Paul Crouches and, you know, the Kenneth Prices and the Copelands and the Hagans and all the others, the T.D. Jakes and such, when their money fails and they suddenly say, Jesus hasn't made me rich. He's made me poor. I better go find another God. And the devil will have gods for you. Now, let's look at these groups that comprise the synagogue of Satan. I was reading an article somebody sent me not too long ago from the United Press International. It's entitled Churchill's Debt of Gratitude. It talks about Sir Winston Churchill. It says Winston Churchill faced a possible lifetime of debt and the end of his political career in 1929. But he was saved from a ruinous day playing the stock market by financier Bernard Baruch, according to a noted historian. You see, the American financier, Bernard Baruch, the Jewish Zionist, who also just happened to be that counselor of presidents for Franklin Roosevelt, Truman. Well, Mr. Baruch's extraordinary act of shrewdness and generosity rescued Churchill from financial ruin, says historian William Manchester. Now, this was published in the February-March issue of American Heritage magazine. In fact, it's Manchester that wrote the best-selling biography of Winston Churchill entitled The Last Lion. You see, Churchill had been invited to come to the United States by Mr. Baruch. The date, October, the last week of October, 1929. Churchill had decided that the American stock market had no way to go but up, and he put all his money in the American stock market. But then comes Black Friday. While he was visiting Mr. Baruch, as it happened, Mr. Baruch said, "Let us go to the floor of Wall Street, right to the very floor, and let's watch from the balcony and see what happens today." And so they did. October 29th, Black Friday. Unwittingly, he said, "Yes, Mr. Baruch, let us go." Well, I'll tell you the rest of the story when we return. You're listening to Power of Prophecy. I'm Tex Moore. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Friends, this is Tex Mars again. I want to give you the opportunity to order from us here at Power Prophecy two tremendously important books. One is entitled Brotherhood of Darkness by my good friend, Dr. Stanley Monteith. The second book is called The Protocols of Zion. And it's written by, well, the learned elders of Zion, 33rd degree. Of course, we've talked about the Protocols of Zion a number of times here on this program. This book is almost 300 pages. You'll find in it what Henry Ford, who gave us the Ford Automobile Company and basically gave the whole industrial world the assembly line, what he thought of the Zionist and of the protocols in this book. The Protocols of Zion, almost 300 pages, $18. Please add $4 shipping and handling. Then The Brotherhood of Darkness by Dr. Stanley Monteith. It's a great overview. It's about 144 pages. And please, we need your gift of $16. And again, add $4 shipping and handling. So a total of $22 for The Protocols of Zion. A total postpaid of $20 for Brotherhood of Darkness. And I think you're going to enjoy these books. Why? Because if you're like me, you love to expose the darkness. And each of these books does that. You're going to find out what the Zionist plotters, their blueprint, in their own words, their design for a super world government, their intention to continue wars and wars and wars, and then to collapse global economies and bring us a new currency based on gold. Now, before you get all excited, you people who own gold, I want you to understand, they intend to confiscate all the gold and own it before the final day. They're not going to let you keep your gold. These books, again, The Protocols of Zion, Brotherhood of Darkness. Just phone us toll free to order these books, 1-800-234-9673 in the United States and Canada. From overseas, you can call us. That number is 512-263-9780. Please call during the work week, Monday through Friday, Central Standard Time, 8 to 5:30, and a very friendly person will be glad to take your order. And then if you're not getting our newsletter, Power Prophecy, each month, we'll send you a free subscription to that as well. Remember always, we're not 501c3 tax exempt because, well, we just don't want to go along with what the government tells us to do. You know, two churches, one's an online Christian ministry and the other is a church up in Illinois, I believe, are now being audited and examined by the IRS. Now, you might think the pastors of those organizations did something financially wrong. No, you're absolutely incorrect. The church up in the Midwest is being examined by the IRS. In other words, intimidated and terrorized by the Internal Revenue Service because the pastor put some things on its bulletin board to be read by the people as they rode up and down the street. He made it plain that his church believed in the sanctity of life. He was against abortion, the killing of babies. And he put messages to that effect on his bulletin board outside. And it offended the public, evidently. According to the IRS, it offended some people and they reported him and his church, a very large church up there, to the IRS. And they're now being audited. The IRS has asked the church to explain why it, being a 501c3, charitable organization, nonprofit, tax exempt, approved by the government, how it can possibly go against public policy. You see, public policy is that abortion is legal. Roe versus Wade. Supreme Court. Congress hasn't changed that. George Bush hasn't tried to change that. And so, there it is. And the pastor and his church let it be known publicly. I guess he should have just sort of quietly mentioned it to his congregation at church. But even then, if an IRS agent or one of their pals was sitting in the pews, they could have taken notes. He's in trouble. Right now, they're being audited. You say, Tex, they can't do that. Shut up! Of course they can do it. They can do whatever they want to. They own you. The IRS is Satan's tax organization, and if you ask for tax-exempt status from the IRS, it will give it to you, but you cannot oppose public policy. Friends, if you don't believe me, I'll tell you what. You just call up the IRS's tax-exempt office. They're in, I believe their last address was in Salt Lake City, Utah. But you can just call your local tax IRS office and say, I need the phone number of the tax-exempt organizations division. I want to ask them, ask them for their brochure. They'll send you a little pamphlet that tells you the rules you must comply with to be a tax-exempt organization. One of them is you cannot oppose public policy. Right now, it's public policy that homosexuality is okay. You can be a homosexual. In fact, Supreme Court ruled that laws against sodomy, you know, sex between two men, are unconstitutional. Homosexuality is okie dokie for the federal government. That's public policy. If you oppose it, well, don't complain when the IRS comes down and says, we've been doing you a big favor. We've been giving you a tax break. We've been letting you go along without paying any taxes. Wow, we've even been giving you a postal subsidy. And all we ask of you is that you go along with public policy. Anytime they can do it. Church up in Illinois, the Midwest found that out. An online group found it out too. So you know what we decided here at Power Prophecy? We just decided to do what God wanted rather than what the government wanted. We don't ask for any favors from the government. We pay taxes like everybody else. That's right. And if you're a citizen of Texas and you buy something from us, you have to pay a sales tax. Sorry. But you know, in all the years that Power Prophecy has existed, according to my staff here, only one person has complained. One person out of thousands has said, oh, I wanted to get a tax break by giving to your ministry. We appreciate your love gifts, but I'm sorry. We can't give you a tax break. Go to Satan's church. They'll give you tax breaks. We just tell the truth here. Now let's return to our program. We're talking some truth today about the pigs that are still in the parlor. I was telling you about Sir Winston Churchill. Happened to be in America on October 29th, 1929. A guest of financier Bernard Baruch. And Baruch said, let's go over to the stock market. I want to show you something that's going to happen that'll be quite of interest to you. Sir Winston Churchill. Later he became the Prime Minister of Great Britain. So he was still, you know, he wasn't the big shot that he became. But Baruch knew he was going to become Prime Minister. He made him Prime Minister. And there they went to the stock market, to the stock exchange on Wall Street. And there in the balcony, they looked down and suddenly a horrible event started to transpire as people began to bail out of stocks and the Dow Jones average went down like a rock. It sunk and sunk. Well, you know history. They say people began to jump out of hotel windows and slash their wrist. They lost everything. In fact, according to William Manchester, the biographer of Winston Churchill, Churchill himself, at the end of the day, after prices had tumbled and plunged deeper and deeper, he turned to his friend Baruch in tears and he said, I'm a ruined man. I will have to leave the parliament. I am disgraced. I've lost everything. All this one day. See, he had invested in the American stock market too. Let me read to you what Mr. Manchester, one of America's most highly acclaimed historians and biographers, had to say. It says here, but Churchill's longtime friend, Mr. Baruch, gently corrected him. Churchill, he said, you have lost nothing. You see, I left instructions with my assistants to find out what stocks you were buying. Every stock you bought, and when you sold it, I bought it from you. Every time, I did exactly the opposite. When you sold, I bought. When you bought, I sold. Stock by stock, share by share. Winston Churchill, he said, you have come out exactly even. I even paid your commissions. Well, wasn't that nice? He made sure that his friend, Mr. Churchill, didn't lose a cent. And Churchill owed him, did he not? And sure enough, World War II was fought. To defeat Nazism? No. To promote Zionism was the main reason. Well, doesn't this show you the power of these men? The stock market, the greatest collapse, and we had then the greatest depression in American history during the 30s, and that, of course, resulted in the election of Mr. Brooks' good friend, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, in America. And over in Britain, of course, they had the biggest recession of their era, too. And what happened? Well, Mr. Churchill soon took office. And both Roosevelt and Churchill joined hands to defeat fascism. They joined hands with their Uncle Joe over in Russia, Stalin. And so Zionism went up the catapult toward the stars. Now, I want you to understand something. Mr. Baruch was powerful. Before him, though, there was a Colonel E. Mandel House. He really wasn't a colonel. You know, sort of like Elvis Presley's Colonel Parker, who was his agent. He wasn't really a colonel either. They just like to call themselves that. Well, I guess I was an Air Force officer. I never made general. Maybe I should just call myself General Tex. But that would be dishonest. These people, they saw nothing wrong with that, I suppose. I would, but they don't. In any case, Colonel E. Mandel House, after World War I, he was the handler. In fact, he had an office, a fancy office, right next to Woodrow Wilson, the president. It was Mr. House, the predecessor of Mr. Brooke, also a Jew, by the way, a member of the Illuminati, who told Woodrow Wilson what to do. You see, Wilson was a nobody. Nobody knew who he was. He was just a professor over at Princeton University. But they made him governor of the state of New Jersey. And then they made him president of the United States. And then they told him what to do. First, they said, we must have a Federal Reserve System. Yes, sir, master, says Mr. Wilson. And then we must have the IRS and the income tax. Yes, sir. Three bags full, said Mr. Wilson. And then we must have World War I to support our agenda and plan. You got it, says Mr. Wilson. I have a lot of documentation about Colonel E. Mandel House. He wrote a novel, believe it or not. These people somehow like to tell what they're going to do, and they write it in novels. He wrote a novel about America of the future and how socialism was the wave of the future. You know, I have a good friend of mine who used to come to Bible Home Church where I preached. Wonderful man, Mr. McDaniel. And he gave me some information from Beaumont, Texas. Now, I was raised around Beaumont, Texas, and there they have Spindletop oil field. You can go to visit the Spindletop Museum, and it's still one of the, you know, one of the petrochemical industrial areas of the world there. They call it the Golden Triangle, meaning, you know, the black gold oil. They still refine all this oil and make artificial rubber and all these things down in Port Arthur and Port Neches and Nederland, Beaumont, Texas. There they had the greatest oil find in North America. I believe the year was, what, 1901, 1903, 1905, around that era in Beaumont, Texas. It went from being a little podunk of a few hundred people to having about 100,000 people in just a few years when the oil gusher came in. And wouldn't you know it, wherever gold is, either black gold or, well, gold. What do you call it, yellow gold? I don't know. the metal versus the liquid type. But wherever gold is, seems like the Illuminati follows, doesn't it? Well, look, Mr. McDaniel gave me a very interesting document. You see, evidently there was an order of the Illuminati chapter in Beaumont, Texas, and a Colonel E. Mandel House just happened to reside there during the oil boom. And he was a member of the Illuminati. In fact, Mr. McDaniel even gave me a copy, an actual copy of the certificate of membership. Gave him a nice little certificate. That's what they do. Makes you feel real good. Little gilded piece of paper. There's his name, Colonel House, member of the Order of the Illuminati, Beaumont, Texas. He was a Texan. Well, it seems like a lot of these Texans are servants of the Illuminati, doesn't it? George Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush, Lyndon Johnson, and E. Mandel House. E. Mandel House went on to found the Council on Foreign Relations in 1921. It was right after World War I. And their plan had been to create this League of Nations, and from the League of Nations, which was the predecessor of the United Nations, it would become the skeleton upon which they would put the flesh of their new world order. But guess what? There were still, at that moment, some very brave men in our Congress, including a Senator Henry Cabot Lodge, and he said, no way, Jose. Oh, excuse me, no way, Mr. House, Colonel House. We're not going to give you this. In fact, we're not even, the Senate is not even going to allow America to become a member. They disapproved the treaty for the League of Nations. Now, you know, they've learned their lesson, the Illuminati. The pigs in the parlor now, they don't want treaties anymore. The American people then will have time to stop the treaties because the Senate has to approve it by a two-thirds vote. So they say, no more treaties. NAFTA, we don't need a treaty for that. No. How about the North American Union? In 2005, Bush went down and signed it. He signed it. They just call it agreements. It's going to merge three. We're going to end our sovereignty. We're going to have a Mexican, United States, Canada, North American Union, our own currency. The whole bit's going to change. Our whole way of government. They didn't even need a treaty. It's just an agreement, quote unquote. It's sort of, you know, what Clinton did, and now Bush is contending with these executive orders. They don't even really need Congress anymore. The president just issues an executive order. If Congress passes a bill, when he signs it in a law, he says, I agree with this bill, except I don't like paragraph such and such, such and such, and such and such. We're not going to go along with that here in the executive branch. Then if Congress says, well, we want to see all these secret dealings you're doing, give us all this documentation, we want to investigate you, they say, well, we're not even the executive branch. How can you do that? We're our own, I don't know, what are they? Dick Cheney says the vice presidency is not part of the executive branch. Well, what is it? I guess it's part of the imperial section of government. I didn't know we had four branches of government. The executive, the judiciary, the legislative, and the imperial. It's sort of a new branch. It's the Illuminati branch. In his book, Brotherhood of Darkness, Dr. Stanley Monteith, you'll find this in other places, but I like it because he put a lot of these things in here. He quotes a Britishman named Lord Tennyson, a poet, a very famous poet. He was the one, by the way, when I was back in high school, I liked it. I guess I was, you know, like, boy, you know, being a macho young boy, you like this kind of stuff. The Charge of the Light Brigade. Alfred Lord Tennyson wrote that. I like that. Didn't you? Onward toward the valley of death, they said, rides the 600. Forward the Light Brigade. Charge for the guns. Into the valley of death rode the 600. And we used to love this in the Air Force. They sent us over to Vietnam, to Southeast Asia. I spent 2 years over there. It says, forward the Light Brigade. Was there a man dismayed? Not though the soldiers knew someone had blundered. Theirs not to make reply. Theirs not to reason why. Theirs but to do and die. Into the valley of death rode the 600. charge of the Light Brigade. We sort of like to think we were the Light Brigade when I was in the Air Force over in Vietnam. It was sending those airplanes charging into Cambodia and Laos and North Vietnam. And our motto was, ours is not to reason why, ours is but to do and die. We knew the government made mistakes. It was a huge blunder. So somehow we sort of identified with the poem by Lord Tennyson. It's the only thing I would agree with Mr. Tennyson on. Theirs, our military's, is not to reason why. Theirs is but to do and die. I suspect this poem is still popular today, even in Iraq. Notice what it says. They realized it was a great blunder, but only rode into the jaws of death, into the valley of death. But listen, in another poem, what Mr. Tennyson has to write. Now I'm going to tell you about this poem. It's called Locksley Hall. Locksley Hall. The reason this is important is that every globalist loves this. Remember the guy who wrote the science fiction novel, The Invisible Man? Mr. Wells? H.G. Wells? Oh, yeah. He loved this poem. He wrote a whole book entitled The Open Conspiracy, endorsing these concepts. Did you know that according to Bernard Baruch and others, President Harry Truman kept this poem? It was typed on a piece of paper and he kept it in his wallet. And they said almost every day he would take his wallet out of his pocket and he would read aloud this piece of poetry by Lord Tennyson. This is my objective, said Mr. Truman, who was a 33rd degree Mason. Friends, this poem is what the synagogue of Satan desires. This poem is what the pigs in the parlor want for us. Listen to what it says. It says, for I dipped into the future, far as human eye could see, saw the vision of the world and all the wonder that would be, heard the heavens fill with shouting, and there rained a ghastly dew from the nation's airy navies, grappling in the central blue, till the war drum throbbed no longer and the battle flags were furled in the parliament of man, the federation of the world. There the common sense of most shall hold a fretful realm in awe, and the kindly earth shall slumber, lapped in universal law. Oh, yes, friends. You see, he said in here, we dipped into the future, and as far as human eye could see, this is the vision of the world. This is all the wonder that's going to be. First, the heavens will be filled with shouting, and there will be raining down a ghastly dew, chemical, biological weapons, nuclear, from the nation's airy navies. In other words, the Air Force is grappling up in the blue till the war drum, finally, the whole world is conquered. And no more does the war drum sound its throbbing sounds, he says. The battle flags were furled. World peace, the parliament of man. Oh, it's not a kingdom of God. It's the parliament of man. It's the federation of the world. And then earth shall be in slumber, lapped in universal law. Universal law. Of course, who makes the law? Who gives the law? Who judicates the law? Who punishes the lawbreaker? Well, of course, they do. The superior, the God-men, Lucifer's own here on earth, the pigs in the parlor. Recently reading an article from Time magazine. It was entitled Alfred and Henry. Alfred and Henry. It seems that Henry Ford, who we know did fight the synagogue of Satan, even he was a little bit confused. Or was he? You know, they sort of made him eat crow. He actually published the Protocols of Zion, and boy, they went after him. And then he apologized and never was heard from again. Boy, don't they have power? But according to Time magazine, I guess they wanted this known. Henry Ford loved the lines that I just read to you, the poem by Alfred Lord Tennyson. Henry Ford, let me read to you, it says, reading these lines from Alfred Lord Tennyson, Henry Ford, brisk, smiling, and 78 years of age, gave newspaper men his views on the post-war world. This was right after World War II. If it was not surprising to find Henry Ford quoting Tennyson, it was surprising to find him urging the U.S. not to wait, but to act for global federation now. Said Henry Ford, the U.S. has 48 states. We don't have 48 different currencies, nor 48 armies, nor 48 sets of custom barriers. We need a federation of the world. Remember, my friends, Henry Ford was a 33rd degree Mason. Now, at the same time, I told you about Harry Truman. He also had this goal. And then we get into the JFK era. I think JFK had determined to fight these men, and yet he had members of his administration also who were globalists, who were admirers of this so-called Federation of the World and the Parliament of Man. Let me read to you what he wrote, Arthur Schlesinger, one of the top advisors to President Kennedy, wrote. He says, the world of law will not be attained by exhortation, in other words, by talk. Let us not kid ourselves that we can have a new world order without paying for it in blood as well as in money. Then Schlesinger said this. He said, remember these lines of Tennyson that Churchill called the most wonderful of modern prophecies and that Harry Truman carried in his wallet throughout his life? And then Schlesinger quotes from the same poem. Think about it. Schlesinger, the top advisor to President Kennedy back in the early 60s, admitted, Churchill says that Tennyson's poem is the most wonderful of modern prophecies. And the same poem Harry Truman, President Truman, carried in his wallet throughout his life. They're not the only ones, of course. Andrew Carnegie embraced this same vision. Andrew Carnegie wrote a book way back in 1893 entitled Triumphant Democracy. Oh, they call it democracy. Isn't that what Bush wants? A global democracy? World socialism, world communism, neo-fascism, but they call it democracy. Friend, you can call anything you want to. You can put perfume on a pig and put a little lace bonnet on it, but it's still a pig. It's still going to stink too. But they call it something nice, don't they? These globalists. Well, Bill Clinton, of course, was one of these people. Next week, we're going to talk a little bit about Bill Clinton and how his mentor, Professor Carol Quigley of Georgetown University, what he had to say about the pigs in the parlor. Well, this is part one. We run out of time. Folks, you got to listen next week. It's been my privilege to share with you today. I'm Tex Mars, and my prayer is you'll tune in each week during this same time and discover the power of prophecy.